Великой победы! Ура!
How we doing, everybody? How we doing? Thank you so much for tuning in to our live stream here on The Dive. It's good to have you all here. Be sure to drop a Z in the chat, drop a like on this stream, subscribe if you haven't subscribed yet. Thank you so much, everybody, for tuning in. It is good to be back. Look at all those Z's in the chat. Most beautiful live chat on all of YouTube. Let's go. We're on the road today, folks. We're going to be on the road for the next month or so. So this is my first stream. So Z's for streaming on the road, on the travel. We've got our first stream on the road. I am in Bali, Indonesia. If you haven't seen my glorious photos and videos with monkeys scratching their own ball sacks and elephants caressing me with their long trunks. So it's good to have all of you here. Salute to all of you. Thank you so much. We've got a huge stream today, as you can probably imagine, because A, I haven't been streaming for the past like 5 days since I had that. And I hope you all like that. We had that conversation with the Russian first deputy permanent representative to the United Nations, Dmitry Polyansky. I had a good conversation with him. It looked like that it got a lot of you guys saw it, got a bunch of views. So I was happy about that. And it was a really fruitful conversation on top of that. So, let me know. This is my first time I've streamed from a laptop in ages. Let me just double check my sound here. Make sure it sounds good. Doesn't sound amazing, but it sounds okay. It sounds okay. I think we're just going to have to deal with that. My first time I've streamed. It actually sounds like shit. I'll probably figure it out another day. It is what it is. It kind of sounds like shit, doesn't it? My audio.
It sounds okay.
Yeah, it does not sound good. I'll figure it out another day. But anyways. So I'm streaming from a laptop where, we got this background. I'm going to do a better background because I'm looking at this now and I don't love it. But anyways, so thank you all for tuning in. You guys said it sounds decent. It sounds okay. Good, but different. Yeah, I don't know. It should sound exactly the same because it's the same exact mic. If anything, the audio should look worse, but the audio actually looks fine, or the video looks fine. It's the audio that sounds bad. But, yeah, so we're going to, I'm going to work on this. This is my first stream. We got here late last night and then I set it up. So I was like, this will do for now. But anyways, thank you all for tuning in. We got a huge stream today. Lots of big news to get through. We've got about 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 stories. We're going to talk about. So, I have some bigger stories. They're meatier stories today because I was thinking to myself, I'm like, should I break them up and do a bunch of small stories, or should I do big, meaty, juicy, beautiful, amazing, gargantuan stories? And that's what we're going to do. Okay. So we're going to do these big stories. And thank you to everyone tuning in on Rumble as well. It's good to have all of you here. We've got several thousand people already watched, 3,000 people tuning in right now already. I want to do one thing, though, because I'm in Bali, Indonesia. Usually, our normal places, I tune in from Los Angeles, California, downtown LA. But I want to see one thing. Let's do a little test in the live chat. Who is tuning in the furthest from Los Angeles? Shoot it in the live chat right now. Where is everyone tuning in from? I see people already saying that they're watching from Greece. Let's see where everyone is watching from right now in the live chat. Tune in. I see. Okay. Audio sounds fine. Okay. Okay. Well, this is going to be good for now. Okay. Okay. So we got Papua New Guinea tuning in, Texas, Syria, Eritrea, Brazil, Serbia. Where else? Where's everyone tuning in from? Venezuela. We've got London, Singapore, Thailand, New Zealand, Canada. Wow. All over the place, all over the world. We've got Canada, Michigan, Quebec, Los Angeles, New Jersey. I'd have to say LA is probably the furthest from me. It took me 36 hours to get here. London, Spain, India, who else we got in here? Germany, Tennessee, we've got Bakhmut, I doubt it, Philippines, Yemen, where else, Brazil, we've got Papua New Guinea, we've got Texas, we've got Toronto, who else we got tuning in from all across Russia, Miami, Maryland, Mexico, Let's do a few more. Where's everyone tuning in from? Roll call. Let's see it in the live chat. We've got Nigeria, Japan, We've got Trinidad and Tobago. We've got Slovenia, Malaysia. Let's do a few more. Argentina, Cuba. We've got Netherlands, Sweden, Ghana, Boston, Sweden, Puerto Rico. Let's do three more. Three more. We've got San Diego. We've got. Who else we got? We've got Iran. We've got Cameroon, and we have got one more. One more. Let's make it a special one. The Bahamas. That's pretty special. That's pretty special. Pretty special. All right, you guys. Thank you so much for being here. Let's get into the news. We've got a big agenda for us today. But of course, I want to remind you all before we get into the news, if you'd like to support the show, you can do so by A, dropping a like and subscribing, B, donating to our locals, my Patreon, or my Giveson Go, which you can find linked below in the description. And all of your support really does help because YouTube has, as you know, permanently demonetized my channel at the behest of the Ukrainian government. There's no hope that they're ever going to remonetize my channel at this point. We've got our amazing new merchandise for our show here. So if you haven't checked it out yet, it is the hottest, drippiest, sexiest merch on the market. I'm just going to show you a little bit right now if you haven't seen it because it is absolutely amazing. I rock it myself all the time. I'm not right now, but I'm always rocking it. You can check it out right here. So if you're watching our stream, just scroll down into the live chat. And actually, the first link I have for you right here, actually, sorry, that's to our locals. Our second link, you can donate to the show there if you'd like. Our second link right here is to my Gearbubble account where you can check out all of our merch. We have our Z merch, our Ghost of Kiev merch, and I'm coming out with some new merch this week. So be on the lookout. But hundreds of you have already grabbed this merch. I highly suggest you do it right now if you haven't grabbed it yet while you still can, okay? So thank you to everyone who supported us by grabbing the merch, donating to our show. You guys are amazing. You keep the show running and the truth flowing. Let's get into our first story, shall we? All right. So we're going to talk about this, okay? So here's a question for you, okay? Here's a question for all of you. I'm posing to all of you in the audience today. How do you know that standing with Ukraine is not about standing on the front lines of freedom and democracy? How do you really know? How can you truly, in all honesty, with all sincerity, tell that that is the case? I mean, it's not just that they're shutting down churches, all opposition parties, censoring those who journalists who try to challenge the Zelensky regime and his Nazi band rights. It's not just that. The true and most honest way you can definitively determine that standing with Ukraine is not about standing with freedom and democracy is by looking at this video right here. And in this video, you're going to watch the one, the only Hillary Clinton come out, the ghoul of all ghouls, the witchiest of all witches comes out and says that standing with Ukraine means standing with freedom and democracy. Of course. So that's how you know that it's definitely not about standing with freedom and democracy.
We have to continue, and I would even argue, increase the military support that we give to the Ukrainians sooner.
Does that include F-16s?
Well, it includes air cover. It includes long-range missiles. It includes much more defensive systems, and not just from us, but from our NATO allies and others. But they are on the front lines of freedom, and we need to support that.
First of all, I would like to thank you very much for the help that we have already received. It's been right to give this help. Somebody perhaps thinks that it's not.
Hello, internet. Hello. I don't know why it's not loading. Anyways. Try it again.
We have to continue, and I would.
Nope, that's not wanting to load. Hopefully that is not an issue that persists through the stream. Anyways, that's how you really know that standing with Ukraine is not about freedom and democracy. Hillary Clinton claims it's about freedom and democracy. So if that's the case, then I guess, standing with UN, with NATO bombings on Libya was about freedom and democracy. And like, standing with NATO's bombing of Yugoslavia was about freedom and democracy. Toppling Bashar al-Assad, freedom and democracy, right? Invading Iraq and Afghanistan, obviously freedom and democracy, okay? So that's, you know, Hillary Clinton says one thing, Not always, but pretty much always, you can just understand that the opposite is true. And look, we know it's not about freedom and democracy because the Canadian Foreign Minister, Melanie Joly, just admitted it. Take a look at this. So Trudeau and Stan just came out and they admitted the truth. Take a look at this. She came out and said that the goal of this whole Ukraine operation is regime change in Moscow. Look at this from the National Post. Regime change is definitely the goal, Joly says, as Canada bans Russian steel and aluminum imports. So Canada's politicians don't want to recognize that the current Russian policy is supported by the ultimate majority of the nation. Okay, and also just so happens that two-thirds of the global population lives under governments that are either neutral to or supportive of Russia's special military operation in Ukraine, but they don't like to tell you that either. So Canada, who has like a roughly 40% approval rating right now, they say that the goal is regime change in Russia. Now, I'm not saying that every Russian supports the special military operation or supports Putin for that matter, but if I was a betting guy, I'm not. But if I was a betting guy, if I was a gambling man, I would have to say that I'd put my money on the bets that probably far more people support Putin in Russia than do support Trudeau in Canada. I mean, look at what's happening in Canada right now. You have a complete dystopian nightmare. You talk about New World Order, Great Reset, all that stuff. I mean, it's already underway in Canada, full on. Okay, so, you know, I just think it's a little bit ironic. All right, it's a little bit ironic that this government that is so deeply unpopular amongst its own constituency is saying that, yeah, the ultimate goal is regime change in Russia, okay? And Trudeau's stand is, you know, they're bending to the pressure, I guess, as is the United States. John Bolton just came out and said that Moscow spooked NATO. Moscow spooked U.S.-led NATO military bloc. John Bolton, again, one of the most ghoulish, evilest warmongers on the face of the planet, has come out and said that the U.S. is weak right now. Joe Biden is weak right now because Moscow spooked NATO from going all in for Ukraine. Now, I don't really know what all in for Ukraine looks like because already we're seeing that they're talking about sending F-16s, MiG fighter jets. They're talking about sending all these Abrams tanks, Leopard 2 tanks. You know, they're doing all this stuff. What does all in look like? Because I thought the war in Ukraine, I thought that the support for Ukraine was about defensive support. I thought this was about supporting Ukraine's borders, making sure that they remain a sovereign government and the Zelensky regime stays in power. I didn't know it was about toppling Putin and removing the sovereignty of the people of Russia. I didn't know it was about taking Russian land away from Russia and giving it to Ukraine, or escalating this to a real hot war between NATO and Russia, or taking this to nuclear fallout. I didn't know it was about that. I thought this was about something as simple as defending Ukraine's borders. Okay, but John Bolton has a different idea. He's saying that, no, actually, this is not about defending Ukraine's borders, and NATO needs to be doing a lot more, and they're essentially bending the knee to Russia right now. Russian intimidation has prevented NATO members from giving Ukraine the weapons it needs and allowing it to attack any target it wants, including key European infrastructure, U.S. Archhawk John Bolton has claimed. This must change, he has insisted in an op-ed urging President Joe Biden to change his policies. I mean, imagine being so delusional. Imagine being so war-hungry that even Joe Biden is not enough for you. The guy that lied us into Iraq and Afghanistan, the guy that lied us into Syria, that said, you know, encouraged the idea and the notion under the Obama administration that Al-Qaeda is on our side in Syria, as Jake Sullivan said infamously in the emails to Hillary Clinton. Imagine thinking this guy is not war hungry enough for you. But that is John Bolton. He said Russian President Vladimir Putin has masterfully deterred NATO from responding robustly enough to end the conflict promptly and victoriously. Time to solve this problem is growing short, Bolton wrote in an opinion piece published on the Wall Street Journal on Wednesday. Okay, the former national security advisor to President Donald Trump blamed Biden for failing to aim for ambiguous goals and claimed his fear of Russian escalation has led to military gridlock in Ukraine. I mean, the only escalation I've seen in this war is the U.S. escalation, the Western NATO-backed escalation to continue to send more arms, more weapons, more munitions, more heavy artillery, more lethal aid to Ukraine at a time when they're also simultaneously encouraging Ukraine to not negotiate on the various peace proposals with Russia. You look at what happened in Istanbul. Look at what happened with, as well as the second round of negotiations with former Israeli Prime Minister Naftali Bennett. And you'll see that Russia tried to pursue peace, actually got very close to securing two peace deals with the Ukrainians. And if it weren't for the UK, if it weren't for the Anglos, if it weren't for the United States that came in and blew up those peace deals, then, I mean, we would have probably had an end to this war. Russia would have taken their troops out of the regions that aren't permanently occupied now, like Zaporozhye, Kherson, the Donetsk and Luhansk People's Republics, all of which voted to join the Russian Federation in open referendums. And the fighting would have stopped. Russia may or may not have, you know, pursued taking regions like Nikolaev or Odessa or connecting all the way to Transnistria. Ukraine could have saved a lot of their country. Ukraine could have saved a lot of their men and their women that are losing their lives on the battlefield right now. They could have kept the Zelensky regime in probably a stronger position, but they chose to listen to the West and continue to escalate. That's the escalation I've seen throughout this war. It hasn't been Russian escalation. It's been Ukrainian escalation and Russia responding. I mean, that's really how it's been since 2014. Russia's pursued all these peace deals, and the West has said, no, we're not going to do it. We're going to build up for war against Russia. Because again, as the Canadian foreign minister just so publicly announced, the goal is not about defending Ukraine. It's not about that. It's about regime change in Russia, deposing Vladimir Putin. Now, fortunately for us, you know, there are some brave souls who are battling against all of the warmongers, all of the ghouls, all of the war pigs in the deep state in the West, okay? There's more and more, it seems like, each and every month. I'm very happy about that. It seems like more and more we're seeing average, everyday Americans and people all across Western states come to their senses and understand that, oh, these are actual Nazis in Ukraine that the Russians are fighting. Oh, this is actually, you know, this was a genocide that was happening unto the people in the Donbass that the Russians are trying to protect. Oh, this isn't about necessarily even just protecting Ukraine's borders. This is about the existential fight for Russia's civilization. This is about an effort by the West to bring Russia under its control. Okay, more and more people are waking up to this fact, and it's really incredible to see, because I remember back on February 24th of 2022, virtually everyone was in unison up in arms that Russia was the most uniquely evil country on the face of the planet. Putin was Hitler, and this was unlike anything history has ever seen before. Okay, the propaganda was very thick. It still is very thick, don't get me wrong. But it was really bad. Now people are waking up to this, okay? We even have U.S. senators. We even have U.S. senators and Congress people who are speaking out about this. One of them is Representative Paul Gosar, okay? He represents Arizona's 9th Congressional District. And look at what he just tweeted out yesterday, okay? He said, "I have repeatedly called for de-escalation and peace between Ukraine and Russia. I've continued to object to Biden's reckless warmongering. Biden had a key Russian pipeline blow up, which is a clear act of war. Now, the Biden regime is taunting Russia by flying U.S. drones in the Russian theater of war operations. These are all escalations by the Biden regime that risk war and U.S. involvement." I 100% agree. My question, though, to Paul Gosar, Representative Paul Gosar, and I hope to have you on the show very soon, is if you truly do believe that the Biden regime blew up that Nord Stream pipeline, Mr. Gosar, why have you not introduced articles of impeachment? Surely there would be other Republicans that would support the idea, but it seems as though even for those that are the critics of the deep state, of the uniparty, of the warmongering party in D.C., and I don't mean the Democratic Party, I mean the war party, the neocons, the establishment Republicans, as well as the entire Democratic Party. I mean, even those who are the most critical of that subsect of the American political elite, they still lack the courage to, I guess, introduce what is demanded at this point in time, at this point in history, which are articles of impeachment for Joe Biden for committing one of the largest industrial terror attacks that we've seen in human history against one of our own allies in Germany. Why have you not done that yet? Look, I get you probably got a busy plate. I don't know what it's like being a U.S. congressperson, but I'd think that that would kind of rise to the top level of concern for me if I was in the United States Congress, if I had all that power. I also think it would be a very politically popular thing to do. Not that that's why you should do something, but I think it would be. pretty politically popular. I sure would favor the idea of you doing something like that, Mr. Gosar. But then we also, like I said, this as well, we have U.S. senators who are coming out and saying this stuff as well now. And for so long, I was worried. I was like, God, we really only have Rand Paul. I mean, can anyone think of any other U.S. senators that are calling balls and strikes when it comes to the madness about what's happening in Ukraine? I think Rand Paul, I think maybe a few have said something here and there. But J.D. Vance is a new MAGA U.S. senator representing Ohio. And I remember when he was running for office, you know, he said, frankly, I don't care about Ukraine. Frankly, I'm running for the United States Senate. I care about what's happening in my own country for my own people. I'm going to put my own country first, you know, pending some crazy earth-shattering, world-altering, history-changing development that might impact the United States. But I mean, Ukraine, I don't care about Ukraine. He said that, and he caused a lot of uproar in the liberal establishment press. And well, he ended up winning his senatorial campaign. Now he's in the U.S. Senate and he's speaking facts. Take a listen to this right here. It's pretty amazing.
I think that what you're seeing is that our leading presidential contenders are responding to the fact that our voters don't like the lack of direction from President Biden, and they don't like committing America to a long-term military conflict where there's no end in sight. Look, you know I've endorsed President Trump. I think that he's the best guy for the job. But it's telling, Brett, that you have the two leading candidates, President Trump and DeSantis, both saying we cannot commit ourselves to the Ukrainian war indefinitely. I think that's the right view. I think that our voters are certainly there. And the question is, frankly, whether a lot of folks in Washington, D.C. get there, too.
You've heard the pushback that sure. We are putting in the money and the weapons. They are doing the fighting. It's not U.S. troops. And without that support, Russia could roll over Ukraine and wouldn't stop there. You've heard that. What's the retort to that?
Well, I think number one, obviously, what the Ukrainians are doing is admirable and it's brave. I mean, nobody gave them a chance in this war.
I'll be the first to say that, too. I mean, I don't know about, admirable, maybe not the right word for me, but brave, 100%, those Ukrainian soldiers are brave. I mean, think about going up against the strongest, most equipped, battle-hardened, historically, strongest military in the world, Russia, okay? Imagine having a ragtag group of Ukrainian soldiers going up against it. These guys, they have little to no military training on many of the ones that are being sent to the front right now. I mean, obviously, there was also a lot of troops in battalions and brigades that were trained to NATO standards. Yeah, that's for certain. They were the most prepared military in all of Europe. They are the most equipped military in all of Europe, with the exception of Russia. Russia's the number one military. So yeah, I'd have to say very brave for those Ukrainian soldiers, though I disagree with what they're being sent in to do. I would have to say they're a whole heck of a lot braver than I am, and I don't envy the position that they are being forced into.
War, and here they are a year later fighting it. I think the counter argument to what you just said is, look, yes, we're not doing the direct fighting, but we spent $120 billion there and counting, and what have we gotten out of it? We've gotten a massive quagmire, a land war in Europe that maybe eventually could risk becoming a nuclear war.
I don't know why this is not working.
There's a quagmire, a land war in Europe that maybe eventually could risk becoming a nuclear war, or at least something that requires American involvement.
We're trying our best, folks, with the limited internet. So, was he about to go again? Let's see. Try one more time.
How do you think it ends? How do you think it ends?
Well, I hope.
No. No. No, no, no. So there you have it. I mean, J.D. Vance came out and said, look, I mean, the fact of the matter is that this is completely insane. It's a quagmire. It's resulted in a massive land war. I mean, you think about how many people are dying right now. The U.S. just came out and admitted that 100,000 plus Ukrainians died in the first year of fighting in this conflict. OK, and if the U.S. is coming out and admitting that 100,000 have already died, and Ursula von der Leyen, the EU commissioner, admitted that 100, would she say 100 or 150,000 had already died a couple months ago? You know, it's far, far, far more than that, probably around 200,000. I mean, I'm just spitballing, but I would not be surprised if someone came to me right now and they said, Jackson, we managed to have the official stats somehow piled together how many troops have died in Ukraine, and it's 200,000, it's 250,000. I would not be surprised, okay? And the other thing you have to understand with this war, it's very unlike any other war. I mean, the Ukrainian military at first was trying to, you know, save their men's corpses and bodies, bring them back home so they could bury them. And in many cases, they still are doing that. But in places like Bakhmut, there's just far too many casualties killed in action for the Ukrainian military to keep up with. I mean, they're worried about staying alive. They're worried about protecting what remains of Bakhmut from the Russians, okay? The idea of piling up the thousands of bodies that round up every couple of days from their side and sending them back to, you know, Kiev is not really a possibility or top priority of the Ukrainians right now. I mean, you're talking about in Bakhmut alone. Think about this. In one city alone, obviously, it's where the largest scale of fighting is currently taking place. You're talking about 1,000 dead Ukrainians each and every day. That's according to Scott Ritter. We had him on the show, a Russian military expert. 1,000 men per day just on one side alone. Okay. Does that include foreign legionaries? Does that include volunteers? Does that include mercs? I don't know. I really don't know. But that's a lot of people. They can't keep up with that. So what I'm trying to say is that these numbers as to how many Ukrainians are dying is actually pretty accurate, because the way it's working is the Russians are bagging and tagging each and every body. They understand how many are dying because they are able to take more land. And when they take more land, they are bagging and tagging each one of these bodies. They're getting each one of these guys' passports. They're getting their IDs. They're able to name them, identify them, and they're able to count. You know, it's not like in Vietnam, in the Vietnam War, where, you know, we said, well, if we shoot X amount of artillery, that's going to kill Y amount of, you know, Vietnamese fighters. And if we do this X many times per week, it's going to leave us with, you know, Y many dead over the course of a week. Okay, that's not how this is working. They're actually bagging and tagging all of these bodies up. Okay, so it's really incredible and sad that this is continuing to go on. And we only have a few people like Gosar, like Rand Paul, in some cases, Marjorie Taylor Greene, and now J.D. Vance in the U.S. Senate, who are saying this when even the United States is recognizing that over 100,000 Ukrainian soldiers are killed, okay? Now, U.N. officials have said that there's only been probably 15,000 Russians that have been killed, 15, 20,000 Russians have been killed so far. I mean, in comparison to this, that number is staggeringly low. U.S. estimates over 100,000 Ukrainian soldiers killed. That's according to Politico. Washington is concerned by Kiev's dwindling supply of ammunition, air defenses, and experienced troops, according to the outlet. U.S. officials believe that more than 100,000 Ukrainian troops have been killed since the outbreak of the conflict with Russia last February, Politico has reported, without disclosing its sources. Washington is concerned by Kiev's lack of ammunition, air defenses, and experienced soldiers. Quote, upwards of 100,000 Ukrainian forces have died in the year-long war, U.S. officials estimate, including the most experienced soldiers. Many of these losses are taking place in Bakhmut. The city, which Russia calls Artemovsk, is a key Ukrainian stronghold and logistics hub in the People's Republic of Donetsk. Okay, so it's really not going well for the Ukrainians at a time when they need to have a sea change. They need to have a title change. They're not going to get it. They're talking about this May offensive that may or may not be happening. We're going to discuss that a little bit later. But the facts are currently right now that there are probably 200,000. I see some of you saying Wagner Telegram channels are claiming 270,000 Ukrainians dead. We really don't know. I would say probably upward of 200,000 dead Ukrainians right now. And there's still only a few voices within the United States Congress that are calling out the insanity of these war pigs, of these ghouls, of these demons that are continuing to escalate this war. And it's truly, you call it a war, it's a suicide mission for the Ukrainian military or for the human race. Because if you escalate too far, too much, too quick, we're going to have nuclear fallout and Armageddon and ensure mutually assured destruction. All right. Hey, look, thank you everyone for tuning in. We got a lot more news on the way. It's good to have all of you here. We got 4,000 plus 4,000 or 5,000 people tuning in. Thank you so much for watching. If you're watching on YouTube or Rumble, be sure to drop a like on this stream right now. Subscribe if you haven't done so yet. And if you'd like to support the show, you can check out my Locals, Patreon, or GiveSend Go linked below. It helps keeps the show running at a time when YouTube is trying to take us down. So thank you to each and every one of you who is supporting us here, okay? And on that note, let's move into the next story. All right, so let's go here. We're going to talk about the drone after this story, the drone story after this one. But I do want to address this because this is pretty crazy. So if you guys remember, not too long ago, Tucker Carlson, host of the number one news show in the United States of America, I believe he averages like 3.2 million views per night on average. Those are weeknights, 5 days a week. He's the number one news show in America right now, Fox News Prime Time. Tucker Carlson came out and said the NSA was reading my text messages. What? The NSA was reading your text messages. Are you kidding me? He said, look, I mean, there was someone very high up. I can't name who it is, but very trustworthy, just here. And I have to believe me, that knew that the NSA was reading my text messages because they'd seen the information and they knew information about my plans that I had conveyed over text message to my producer that no one else knew, not even my brother, not even my wife, my parents. No one knew about this. The NSA was reading my text messages. The National Security Administration, yeah, NSA. So this is really shocking stuff. And I was thinking about this for a while. I'm like, Jesus. Okay, well, if the NSA is reading Tucker Carlson's messages, the number one news show in the nation, I mean, any of us, for sure, they're reading our messages. Anyone, Jimmy Dore wants to run for president, okay, just know they're reading your phone messages, 100%. But I was wondering for a while, I was like, I wonder what they were reading in his messages, you know? I wonder what they were reading. I tweeted about this like 2 weeks ago, actually. It's very odd. I tweeted about this like a week and a half, 2 weeks ago. I was like, never forget that the NSA was reading Tucker Carlson's text messages. And then Tucker Carlson went on the Full Send podcast just last week, actually. I think it was about 6 days ago. And he explained what they were looking into in his text messages. And if you can't believe it, I mean, the NSA was hacking into his Signal messages. So Signal is supposed to be an end-to-end encrypted messaging service. It's what Edward Snowden used to use. Now I guess he uses some new app because I guess Signal apparently has been compromised. I mean, by the looks of this story, it definitely has. But they hacked into Tucker's end-to-end encrypted messaging services in Signal after he was planning a trip to Russia to interview Vladimir Putin about the war in Ukraine. Yeah, take a listen to this. It's incredible.
And I've been all over the world. I feel like I've been everywhere except Russia. And Russia is a combatant in a war that's changing the world. And like, I should go see it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was planning on it, and I got stopped by the U.S. government from doing it. And I was...
Well, you were going to go?
Of course.
And then what were you going to do?
Interview Putin. Why wouldn't
I? You had it set up?
I was working on it, and they broke into my text messages. The NSA broke into my Signal account, which I didn't know they could do.
Oh, so Signal's not even...
Our Wi-Fi is not great, folks. We're going to have to deal with this somehow. I'm just going to have to like preload the videos. I'm going to have to download
broke,
them.
Broke into my Signal account, which I didn't know they could do.
Oh, so Signal's not even safe.
Oh, God.
Signal's not safe anywhere.
Signal is not safe.
I know. People think WhatsApp's safe.
No.
It's like, man.
WhatsApp?
No.
WhatsApp is not. You know what's safe? And ask any mafia don. Park your car in front of the liquor store. Leave your phone in the vehicle, in your Caprice Classic, and walk out behind the liquor store. In the vacant lot back there with the winos to talk. To the person you want to talk to.
How many
to.
Times have you done that?
Zero.
Okay.
Because I'm like lazy. I'm like. And I'm actually, I always say to myself, you know, I'm not hiding anything. I don't have a secret life. I'm pretty upfront. And some people like it, and
okay. Well, you can't lower the video quality on Twitter any more than it already is. It automatically downloads. Unfortunate. Unfortunate. Well, I will come better prepared for next segment. But in this video, he basically explains that, look, you can't even do basic journalism anymore without the NSA spying on your own signal messages, okay? Signal messages which are supposed to be secure, safe, free of intrusion. I mean, as a U.S. citizen, why are they spying on you regardless of what you do? If you have private business, it's none of your business. What good does the government have in spying into Tucker Carlson's private text messages? If they don't have a reason, if they can't justify it, and they can't because Tucker Carlson asked them, they refuse to explain why they did what they did, then they shouldn't be doing it. It's as simple as that. But of course, they're trying to intimidate him. They're trying to make sure that they control the narrative. They're trying to make sure that the truth does not get out there, especially about this war in Ukraine. And the truth is, as it's kind of the theme of tonight's stories, that the truth is getting out there, okay? And
for no resemblance at all.
Exposed that on a new nightly broadcast of his show. He came out and he announced that he had asked every potential 2024 GOP presidential candidate to answer six key questions on the war in Ukraine. And as promised, the full responses are here below. So I want to go through them with all of you and let's break them down, because some of them are better than others. We're not going to look through every candidate here, but first let's look at former president Donald Trump. And he is already, as we all know, a guaranteed candidate. He's a candidate for president of the United States in 2024. He said, like inflation and numerous other self-inflicted wounds and mistakes made over the past 2 years, Russia would definitely not have raided and attacked Ukraine if I was your president. Probably true. In fact, for 4 years, they didn't attack, nor did they have any intention of doing so long as I was in charge. But the sad fact is, due to a new lack of respect for the U.S. caused at least partially by our incompetently handled pullout from Afghanistan and a very poor choice of words by Biden explaining U.S. requests and intentions, the bloody and expensive assault began and continues to this day. That is all history. But how does it end? And it must end now. Start by telling Europe they must pay at least equal to what the U.S. is paying to help Ukraine. They must also pay us retroactively the difference. At a staggering $125 billion, we are paying 4 to 5 times more. And this fight is far more important for Europe than it is for the U.S. Next, tell Ukraine that there will be little more money coming from us unless Russia continues to prosecute the war. The president must meet with each side, then both sides together, and quickly work out a deal. This can be easily done if conducted by the right president. Both sides are weary and ready to make a deal. The meetings should start immediately. There is no time to spare. The death and destruction must end now. Properly executed, this terrible and tragic war, a war that never should have started in the first place, will come to a speedy end. God bless America. And he said, they said, is opposing Russia and Ukraine a vital American national strategic interest? And he said, no, but it is for Europe, but not for the United States. Also, I guess one could make that argument. I don't really care what he thinks about Europe. I care what he thinks about what the United States position, strategic position, should be towards Russia. And he's correct about that. He said, should the United States pursue regime change in Russia? Donald Trump responds, says, no, we should support a regime change in the United States. That's far more important. The Biden administration are the ones who got us into this mess. And that is the most base response at all. Should we pursue regime change in Russia? Donald Trump says, no, we should be pursuing regime change in the United States. Okay, comrade, very true. Do you believe the United States faces the risk of nuclear war with Russia? And he says, depends on who the president is. Yeah, I agree with that as well. So let's also take a look, though, at potential candidate Ron DeSantis, who, by the way, his poll numbers are going down, down, down. His poll numbers are not looking great right now. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis answers Tucker Carlson's Ukraine questions. Now, I have some mixed opinions about his responses here. So let's take a look. He said, while the U.S. has many vital national interests, securing our borders, addressing the crisis of readiness with our military, achieving energy security independence, and checking the economic, cultural, and military power of the Chinese Communist Party. Okay, so this is who he is. He's a Bannonite, you know, teal-funded, pro-war with China, but not pro-war with Russia, Republican. So this is what they're going to do. They're going to try to steal the MAGA movement and say like, oh yeah, we're anti-war when it comes to Russia. We shouldn't be going to war with Russia. But then they're going to take you to war with China, okay? No, that's insane. That's even more insane than going to war with Russia. Becoming further entangled in a territorial dispute between Ukraine and Russia is not one of them. So calling this, what's happening in Ukraine, a territorial dispute, very base. I honestly didn't think I'd hear that from DeSantis. The Biden administration's virtual blank check funding of this conflict for as long as it takes without any defined objectives or accountability distracts from our country's most pressing challenges. Now, that sentence sounds nice, but if you really read through the lines, he's basically just saying, if we are going to give them a blank check, we have to have some clear, definitive goals. So that's not very good. That's really not any different than Biden. Without question, peace should be the objective. Okay, I mean, yeah, but how are you going to do it? The U.S. should not provide assistance that could require the deployment of American troops or enable Ukraine to engage in offensive operations beyond its borders. F-16s and long-range missiles should therefore be off the table. These moves would risk explicitly drawing the United States into the conflict and drawing us closer to a hot war between the world's two largest nuclear powers. That risk is unacceptable. So it doesn't say anything about tanks here, doesn't say anything about other offensive weapons. It just says, you know, no F-16s, no long-range missiles, okay. And he's basically saying that, you know, peace should be the objective, but we should also continue supplying them with military support. Donald Trump said supply them with money. That could just mean governmental aid, making sure that they have reconstruction funds, you know, that their government doesn't collapse, economy doesn't collapse, which, yeah, I mean, that's, I guess, the best we're probably going to get right now out of any presidential candidate that has a serious chance of winning. But, you know, saying that, oh, you know, like we need more weapons, but not F-16s. No. No, no, no. A policy of regime change in Russia, no doubt popular among the DC foreign policy interventionists, would greatly increase the stakes of the conflict, making the use of nuclear weapons more likely. Okay. He also says such a policy would neither stop the death and destruction of the war nor produce pro-American Madisonian constitutionalists in the Kremlin. History indicates that Putin's successor in this hypothetical would likely be even more ruthless. The cost to achieve such a dubious outcome could become astronomical. Okay, the real answer for that should just be no, like what Trump said. No, we don't need regime change in Russia. We need regime change in the United States. What do you mean? Why do you have to have all these like, oh my God. Well, you know, if we do this, then it's going to maybe make things worse. It's like, no, just say this is a sovereign country. The U.S. should not be intervening. This is not something we should even be entertaining. This is not our duty to, you know, coup a sovereign government or something like that. You're completely insane if you are even entertaining this idea, which he is here. Okay. I mean, he's saying he doesn't want it, but he is entertaining it. Trump had the right response, DeSantis wrong response. Our citizens are also entitled to know how the billions of U.S. taxpayer dollars are being utilized in Ukraine. We cannot prioritize intervention in an escalating foreign war over the defense of our homeland, especially as tens of thousands of Americans are dying every year from narcotics smuggled across our open border and our weapons arsenals critical for our own security are rapidly being depleted. Okay, Mike Pence answers the question. Yeah, he says that, you know, the U.S. needs support Ukraine against Putin. Vivek Ramaswamy. I don't even know who this guy is, really. I mean, he probably doesn't have a chance of winning. He's kind of like the... He's going to be like the Andrew Yang of the Republican Party this year. Christy Noem. Okay, she's just a China hawk. She wants war with China. She's not going to win. Greg Abbott. You know, this guy's a fucking idiot. Tim Scott. He's not going to win. Chris Christie. Not going to win. It's not even worth spending my time on these people. The following GOP presidential hopefuls did not respond. John Bolton. Did not respond. No surprise there. We know how he feels. He wants to wipe Russia off the face of the earth. Nikki Haley did not respond. She also wants to wipe Russia off the face of the earth. Asa Hutchinson, Arkansas governor, did not respond. Mike Pompeo did not respond. He also wants to wipe Russia off the face of the earth. So I'm not surprised about that. The only one that you can even say you slightly are going to have some faith in that they're going to do some of the right things is Donald Trump. Okay. DeSantis, shill, China hawk. He's going to take us to war with China. Don't support him. You know, if anyone there's even possible that I'm hopeful about in ending this crisis, it would have to be Donald Trump. And I'm not saying this as someone who likes Donald Trump. I've never even voted for Donald Trump. But I'd have to say he is the only senior statesman, the only person in D.C. right now who has a certain level of clarity when it comes to how we should end this conflict in Ukraine. Of course, he came out just like 2 weeks ago and he said that, yeah, he would support a peace deal with Russia that would involve giving parts of Ukraine like Donetsk, Lugansk, Zaporozhye, Kherson up to Russia to permanently have, to bring into the Russian Federation. And that, in all honesty, is the only way that this is ever going to end. All right. Hey, look, thank you all for tuning in. We got more great news on the way. Thank you for tuning in, everybody. If you're watching right now, as always, be sure to drop a like, drop a Z in the live chat if you haven't done so. Yeah, let's get some Z's in the live chat. And we are going to get into our next story. We're going to talk about the drone downing. All right. Give me 1 second here and we will get right into it. And I want to say thank you to Richie Molina for the Rumble Rant. Been a while. Enjoy the trip. Keep up the good work. Thank you so much, Richie Molina, for the support. Appreciate you. Thank you. And let's get into the next story. Z's in the chat for the drone. Okay, this is pretty amazing. So look. I don't know if you guys saw the news, but there was this U.S. drone that was flying over Crimea, or very close to Crimea. Those in the West are claiming it was in international waters. It was in international waters, maybe, but it was definitely right next to Crimea, where the Ukrainians and the West have been doing a lot of these terror attacks. I mean, you have terror attacks within Crimea. You have them like launching these drones, launching missiles, trying to launch these underwater missiles, launching the, I mean, obviously the massive attack on the Kerch Bridge in Crimea, the Crimean Bridge. So you have all these terror attacks, you have the drone attacks, you have all this stuff, right? And it's like, now they're flying another U.S. drone right next to Crimea, and you expect that Russia's not going to do something about it? Well, they did do something about it, and it's actually pretty funny what they did. But the United States took this very seriously, very seriously. We're very serious about it. They said, we're not going to send any of our U.S. drones into the Russian theater ever, because we don't want Russia to shoot one down and then get their hands on our precious drone technology, because we have the best drones on the planet. We have our Reaper drones. We spend millions, billions of dollars in developing these impenetrable drones that can't be defeated, right? Drone lives matter. Yes, we have these incredible drones that cannot be defeated, okay? And we don't want the Russians to get their grubby hands on our drone technology, okay? Because, those Iranian drones, those kamikaze drones, those Bayraktars, they're definitely not doing any damage on the Ukrainian military right now, are they, huh? The Ukrainians are definitely stopping all those drones. They're just, the Russians need some new drones, I think. No, so they pissed away tens of millions, probably billions of dollars on developing these drones. And then they sent one right up into over Crimea. And obviously, Russia's going to respond. They knocked it out of the sky, and then the U.S. came out, and they're like, oh my god, they hit our drone, they attacked our drone, they knocked it out of the sky, and everyone's like, really? Really? They attacked, they shot your drone down out of the sky? They did that? You know, they wasted, like, hundreds of thousands of dollars in, like, munitions or anti-missile defense systems to shoot your drone out of the sky? They did that? Okay. I mean, maybe they did that. Maybe they didn't. They're like, no, it's serious. They really shot it out of the sky. Lloyd Austin, defense secretary, he called from Moscow to discuss the drone downing. Lloyd Austin and Mark Milley contacted their Russian counterparts for the first time in months to discuss the fact that they shot down their multi-$10 million pet project of a drone. U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin reached out to his Russian counterpart, Sergei Shoigu, on Wednesday for the first time in months to discuss the incident in which an American spy drone went down in the Black Sea waters off of Crimea. According to the Russian defense minister, Shoigu told Austin that the incident was caused by the Americans violating the airspace restriction declared by Russia. With all the proper international notifications in place, Shoigu called U.S. drone flights off the Russian coast provocative in nature and risk an escalation in tensions in the Black Sea. Now, look, I'm just going to be honest with all of you right now. Was it over Crimea? Was it in international waters right next to Crimea? Who knows? I don't really care. Because all I know is if Russia decided that they wanted to fly a drone right along the coastline in New York or right along the coastline off Santa Monica and Beverly Hills, if they were flying a drone right next to, San Francisco, right next to the Pelosi residence in San Francisco, that drone would be shot down so fast. It'd be before you could even blink your eye that we'd have an international crisis, United Nations Security Council panel drawn up to discuss the provocative nature of the Russians flying their drones next to the United States borders. But it's completely fine for the United States to do this in the Russian theater of war right next to Crimea, where you have a bunch of civilians living, where you've already had multiple terror attacks carried out by the West take place throughout this war. Okay, so the U.S. freaked out over this, and they said, you shot down our drone. Well, it turns out that they actually didn't technically shoot down the drone. This is what happened. the drone was flying, and as you can see here, a Russian Su-27 fighter jet approached the American MQ-9 Reaper drone and downed the drone, destroyed the drone by simply dropping some fuel on it in the middle of the sky. 30 million dollar drone gets pissed on by a Russian Su-27 and absolutely obliterated. Take a look. So here comes the Su-27. This is like Top Gun. Comes in, just drops some jet piss on it, and there it goes. Now there's all these people that are coping and seething, and they're like, there was contact with the drone. It hit the drone. That's why it went down. No, there was no contact. There's no contact. They're like editing photos to make it look like there's contact. But if you watch the original footage, there's... Okay, and then it comes again, I guess. And this is when it gets it. So here comes the... Look at that. That's beautiful. Beautiful shot there in the last moments before the MQ-9 Reaper drone's death. So here comes the Su-27. It just farts out some fighter jet gas onto the MQ-9 Reaper drone, the impenetrable Reaper drone that the Russians can't get their hands on the technology of. And then it got so triggered that it like changed in the camera changed into the gay pride flag. So yeah, pretty amazing. Russian Su-27 jet downs American MQ-9 Reaper drone by simply dropping some fuel in the middle of the sky. Ingenious. I love it. So, you know, again, Biden condemning them for taking down this U.S. drone. They claim they shot it down. Then now the U.S. released that footage, by the way. That doesn't make you look good. That's embarrassing. That's embarrassing. That something you spent billions of dollars in developing simply got just like farted on by a Russian fighter jet and it got taken out of the sky. Okay, so, you know, of course, we have to do the comparison. What if Russia flew a drone over the United States? Well, the response would be probably like a direct threat of war. Again, so it would be a direct, they'd have an escalation of war. They'd probably like go and bomb Russia, try to bomb Moscow or some shit. We already saw how they responded to the Chinese weather balloon. They had a weather balloon flying over the United States and they started to shoot. Then they had like a week of shooting down random like hobbyist balloons from U.S. hobby groups and stuff. So we know how they react. Here's a little meme someone put together. I like this meme. The Pepe the Frog fighter jets shooting down the drone. Very based. Lindsey Graham had an interesting response here. This was his response. So, you know, the Russians shot down something that was flying over their sovereign country in a time of war when there's been many acts of war and terror committed against the Crimean people and Crimean infrastructure. And this is how he responded, completely delusional.
They shot down our drone. What should our answer be?
Well, we should hold them accountable and say that if you ever get near another U.S. set flying in international waters, your airplane would be shot down. What would Ronald Reagan do right now? He would start shooting Russian planes down if they were threatening our assets. American foreign...
They shot down...
Ronald Reagan. What would Ronald Reagan do right now? Ronald Reagan, the guy who explicitly said that, you know, he was not going to take our country to war against Russia, and he was going to make sure we had superior fighter power over the Soviets and the Russians, and make sure that, you know, we have a stronger economy than the Russians. What would he do right now? Well, I can tell you he definitely wouldn't be doing what Biden is doing. Destroying our economy. Emptying out all of our munition and artillery stockpiles for the Ukrainians. So we have a worse economy than the Russians. We have a deeply in crisis military right now because we have like no stockpiles. And also, definitely would not do what Lindsey Graham just suggested. Let's watch this one more time. Attacking, start shooting down Russian planes. Would not be doing that.
Our drone. What should our answer be?
Well, we should hold them accountable and say that if you ever get near another U.S. set flying in international waters.
And it's like this was an unmanned aerial vehicle. It's not like we had a fighter pilot in there. It's like this is a robot that we had flying in a theater of war above a sovereign nation. What did you expect?
Our airplane would be shot down. What would Ronald Reagan do right now? He would start shooting Russian planes down if they were threatening our assets. American foreign...
And again, this is also the same guy who's encouraging the United States to fly our fighter jets through the Taiwan Strait, over the South China Sea, provoke, you know, Chinese fighter jets and planes and stuff like that all the time, each and every day. Okay, now the U.S. is freaking out again. They first freaked out when it got shot down, then they released the footage. Now they're freaking out again. They're like, we want our drone back. We were flying our drone over your country. We want it back. We want to give it back to us. And they're serious about this. I'm not joking. They're serious. They say they want the drone back from Russia. They're like, Russia, give us our drone back now or else. Well, Maria Zakharova has responded. She is the spokesperson for the Kremlin, I believe. Yeah, right? She came out and said this right here. Trolling John Kirby. So John Kirby, spokesperson for the Secretary of Defense or the Defense Department, came out and said, you know, give us our drone back. And she responded and she said, call the Ukrainians. They will get it. Just call John Kirby. Call the Ukrainians up. They'll get it for you, the drone. White House Security Council Communications Coordinator John Kirby called on the United States prospects of getting MQ-9. We haven't gotten it, and I'm not sure if we can. It fell very, very deep in the Black Sea, so we're still trying to see if it's possible to make any effort to get it. Maybe not. We're studying the footage from around the wreck. And Maria Zakharova responded and said, John, ask the New York Times for the phone number of the private Ukrainian company that the American propaganda says blew up the Nord Stream pipelines very, very, very deep in the Baltic Sea. They are, judging by your papers, deep-flying specialists. They will get it. The troll level of the Russians is absolutely incredible. So, you know, I always thought that story was funny. It's like Zelensky came out, of course, and said, you know, we have nothing to do with this Nord Stream explosion story. But the New York Times, after weeks and weeks of ignoring Cy Hirsch's publication on how the U.S. and the Norwegians were responsible for the Nord Stream pipeline terror attack, the New York Times came out and said, oh, actually, it was the Ukrainians who did it. And the Germans claimed to have found the boat. The Germans said that a giant Ukrainian yacht was responsible for planting the bombs on the Nord Stream pipeline. And when I was thinking yacht, I was thinking like Jeff Bezos' yacht, like a massive yacht, because as we all know, this took a state actor to carry out this terror attack. So I thought it was going to be like a massive, massive like shipping barge with like deep sea diving capabilities, submarine, like all this stuff. And then the Germans posted the photo of it. Look at what they claim was responsible for the Nord Stream terror attack. They said they're not joking. They're not joking here. They said that this is what it was. German Spiegel showed the yacht believed to be connected to the explosions on the Nord Stream pipeline attacks. The vessel on which the saboteurs are believed to have transported their explosive devices is the sailing yacht Andromeda. This right here. They claim this is what was responsible. Not even kidding. They claim this... They claim this little boat is what was responsible. This little dinghy is responsible for one of the largest industrial terror attacks in human history, if you can believe it. Aaron Matte retweeted this and he said, to whoever is doing the Nord Stream cover-up, first, I don't envy you. Tough job. Second, why not find a bigger boat? One that could conceivably carry the hundreds of pounds of explosives needed to blow up a heavily fortified deep sea pipeline in multiple areas. There's no way that this could have carried hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of pounds of explosives needed to blow up the Nord Stream pipelines. Oh, it was a little dinghy. A yacht. Absolutely incredible. Absolutely incredible. Okay. So there you have it. Russia downs the MQ-9 Reaper drone by simply farting on it. And Maria Zakharova trolls the United States into oblivion. All right. Let's take a little bit of a break here. Thank you all for tuning in. We got more news on the way. And hope you're all doing well. We got a bunch of people watching right now. It's good to have you all here. Again, I'd like to remind you all, if you haven't done so yet, be sure to check out our merch store. You can get our amazing Z merch by clicking on the link in the live description right now. So all you have to do is scroll down here and you will find the second link right here is our merch store. You can get your merch right now. It's the best merch on the internet. Our Z merch, our Ghost of Kiev merch. You're not going to want to miss it. Get it while you still can. And also, if you'd like to support the show, you can do so by donating to my Locals, my Patreon, or my Gibson Go, which are linked below right there. Lastly, if you haven't done so, be sure to join our Telegram channel because we've got almost 12,000 people in there. It's where you can find me completely uncensored. Click that link to join our Telegram. I will send it in the live chat for all of you right now. Join our Telegram if you haven't done so. It's free to do, and it's where you're going to find all my breaking news and all my updates about our show, guests we have on, and breaking news, all that stuff. So check that out right there. And let's get into our next story. Let me get rid of these tabs. All right. So, we have got some breaking news, all right? But before we get into the breaking news, it broke right before I went live here with all of you, and I just had to include it in this segment. I wanted to show you this, because I'd already prepared a story about the fact that the West is warning Ukraine not to blow its last-ditch effort. Why are they calling this a last-ditch effort? This is the New York Times coming out and saying, do not blow your last-ditch effort, okay? They're calling Bakhmut the last-ditch effort, okay? Some U.S. and EU officials now worry that Ukraine is using up thousands of shells a day in the battle for Bakhmut at a pace that is unsustainable and could jeopardize a planned springtime campaign that Kiev's Western sponsors hope will prove decisive. The Pentagon has reportedly even raised concerns with Kiev about this, warning Ukraine about wasting ammunition. The U.S. and its allies did not stockpile weaponry in anticipation of supplying an artillery war. The outlet noted a secret British task force is trying to track down and buy Soviet-caliber ammunition from around the world. The U.S. and NATO have managed to put together some shells, but they are supposed to be used in the upcoming offensive. I mean, how ironic is that? They're going all across the world to these former Soviet states and Soviet allies, satellite states, and they're like, can you give us some of this old Soviet weaponry to fight the Russians? Can you do it? Can you help our Banderas and fight the Russians? Okay, so. But they're saying that this is a last-ditch effort, which is quite something. It's quite something. They're calling this catastrophic effort to fight for Bakhmut a last-ditch effort. Now, why would they be saying that? Well, the answer is quite simple. It's a last-ditch effort because after the Russians move in on Bakhmut, they will have an open road, essentially, to Kramatorsk, which is where we're going to see the last major round of fighting in Ukraine. And, I mean, you're going to see a lot of fighting there. It's probably going to make Bakhmut look like children's play. It's going to look like nothing compared to what we're going to see in Kramatorsk. Now, I can't predict the future. I'm not a, Russian military expert. I don't have the Russian military plans or Ukrainian military plans before my eyes to look at before I come out and broadcast to each of you every single night. But I would have to say, if I were to guess, that would be the case, that Kramatorsk is where we're going to see the most major levels of fighting in the Donbass region, okay? Then we saw this. The United States is expecting a Ukrainian counteroffensive to take place in May. So this is why they're rounding up all of these munitions and artillery shells, trying to get more artillery shells from the EU. France is proving to be a little bit of an issue with regard to this task. But yeah, the U.S. is expecting Kiev to launch a counterattack against Russian troops in May. So in this Politico article that cited unnamed U.S. officials, where they claim that Ukraine had already lost 100,000 men in the first year of fighting in the war. They're also claiming that Ukraine is planning to stage a counteroffensive in May. We'll see about that. They're calling it the spring counteroffensive. U.S. military aid packages going back 4 or 5 months have been geared toward what Ukraine needs for this counteroffensive. One source cited by the outlet said on condition of anonymity. Kiev is preparing the operation even as its manpower and resources are being drained, Politico reports, by its continued clinging to the Donbass city of Bakhmut. The city, which senior U.S. officials assess as only symbolic significance, became the scene of some of the most intensive fighting between Russia and Ukraine of the entire year. Okay? According to the outlet, Kiev is yet to settle on a strategy for its counteroffensive. One scenario involving a push across the Dnieper River near the city of Kherson is not realistic, U.S. officials believe, since Ukraine does not have the manpower for an amphibious operation of that kind. Okay? And this is something that we've known about for quite some time. There is no definitive control over Kherson, over the Dnieper River. There is indirect fire control over that river from both sides. It's a battle. It's an artillery battle. No one has direct control. The second one would require advancing from the north in an attempt to cut off Russian troops from Crimea. Okay? And we'll see what happens, but I really don't think that either of these are going to prove to be successful. I mean, at best, you're going to do maybe some damage to the Russian military. You're going to cause a lot of men to lose their lives on both sides. Obviously, far more on the Ukrainian side. And that's going to kind of be the final nail in the coffin of the Ukrainian military, assuming that this fails. Okay, but again, I just want to show you this clip I showed you a second ago, because many senior U.S. officials have far greater plans than just a counteroffensive. They want to take this war to the next level. Take a listen to what Lindsey Graham had to say one more time.
They shot down our drone. What should our answer be?
Well, we should hold them accountable and say that if you ever get near another U.S. set flying in international waters, your airplane would be shot down. What would Ronald Reagan do right now? He would start shooting Russian planes down if they were threatening our assets. American foreign...
So, what Lindsey Graham is saying we should do is escalate this to nuclear war, because if we start shooting down Russian planes, that, by default, is taking us to nuclear war, okay? And it seems as though this is where more and more people are heading. Like, this is where people want to take the war. They want to take it into a full-scale hot war, escalate it to the nth degree. Poland happens to be among those that are very supportive of this. Poland, this is the breaking news I saw just before I went live, is going to be the first NATO member to provide Ukraine with fighter jets. Warsaw said it will send Soviet-made MIG MiG-29 fighter jets in the coming days. Poland will become the first NATO member to supply Ukraine with fighter jets, as Polish President Andrzej Duda said Thursday that his country plans to give Kiev 4 Soviet-made MiG-29 fighter jets in the coming days. We'll see how long it takes for the Russians to blow those up and turn them into, you know, hunking piles of steel in the bottom of the Baltic Sea. In the coming days, we are handing over 4 aircraft to Ukraine in full working order, Duda said at a press conference. This is not happening without the explicit consent of the United States. Make no mistake about it. Ukrainian pilots are trained to use MiG-29, so the Polish planes can be used in battle once they arrive. Duda said Poland will send more MiG-29s after the first 4 are delivered. Last year, in March of 2022, Poland offered to give MiG-29s to the U.S. to transfer them to Ukraine, but the Pentagon declined, citing concerns of escalation. So now the Pentagon has said, oh, just go for it. Send them yourself. Send them yourself. Okay? But now U.S. and its NATO allies are less concerned about escalation, and Poland's move could inspire other alliance members to provide Ukraine with aircraft. Okay, so this is far different than the idea of sending tanks, because the idea of sending tanks is going to take months and months and months, if not over a year, okay, to do something like that, maybe longer. They're not going to get the tanks. The war will, I mean, in all likelihood, come to a close before they even have the opportunity to get tanks into Ukraine. These planes, however, the MiG-29s, they could very well get these in quickly if the, you know, people in Poland, if Duda is serious about this, and if there are no roadblocks. Now, that's a lot of ifs. We'll have to wait and see, but it seems like they're pretty serious about getting Ukraine these MiG-29 fighter jets in the coming days. A drastic escalation, no doubt, one that will have serious ramifications from Russia. Although I really don't think it's going to do anything. Four MiG-29s, that's not going to change the tide of the war. It's just going to make Poland look good for the Ukrainians. And, you know, it's going to, I really don't know what it's going to do. It's going to do nothing. You know, it's going to do nothing. But what else is new? That's kind of been the whole aim of the war. It's like, let's get rid of as many munitions as we can to make as much money as we can and piss off the Russians as much as possible and kill as many Russians as we can. That's the entire goal of all of this. All right. Moving on. I want to say thank you, first of all, to our first sponsor of the night. It is American Financing. If you want to check out American Financing, you can click on the link in the live description or click on the link I'm going to send in the live chat for all of you right now on YouTube and Rumble. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about American Financing and why I trust them and I truly do love working with them. Okay, so there's the link in the live chat for all of you right now for American Financing. Go click on it. It's going to take you to their website, which you can see right here, my landing page, American Financing, America's home for home loans. As you can see here, American Financing has been in business for quite some time. And I know most of you are probably feeling the effects of inflation, especially in the West, especially in the United States, if you're living under the Biden regime. Filling up your car, grocery shopping, home repairs, everything is more expensive now than it was a year ago. Most of you are paying these bills with your credit card. Consumer debt rose over $1 trillion in the last year. It's the biggest increase we've seen in 20 years, okay? Well, if you're a homeowner, there's a way out. You need to call American Financing. They'll put together a plan to pay off that high interest debt and create meaningful savings for you every month. They're saving people just like you $1,000 per month by doing just that. And so I don't want you to let procrastination get in the way. Call their salary-based mortgage consultants right now and get your no-cost obligation savings review. It costs nothing to get started, and if you start today, you could delay two mortgage payments, giving you greater savings up front. So don't forget to click on the link I am sending in the live chat right now to check out American Financing. They will help you. They employ people based on their mortgage consultants based on salaries, not based on, you know, rapacious for-profit methods of employment that cause them to fuck over their clients. So go check them out right now, or you can call them at 888-976-5555. Again, that is 888-976-5555, or you can use that link in the description. All right, thank you to American Financing for supporting our show here on The Dive. And on that note, let's get into our next story. So, I couldn't believe my eyes when I saw this story. U.S. intelligence from the Defense Intelligence Agency has come out and they said that China is preparing to fight a war that they simply don't want to fight. Finally, someone in the deep sea, someone in the Beltway, someone in D.C. is admitting the truth. Yeah, China doesn't want to go to war over Taiwan. They want to peacefully integrate Taiwan into their country. They want the United States and virtually every other country across the world to recognize the one China policy, that Beijing is the sole government that oversees all of China, including Taiwan. Okay, so this is no surprise to me, but it's a surprise to me that I guess that someone in the DC deep state elite is admitting this. U.S. intelligence official says China is preparing for a war it does not want to fight. A Defense Intelligence Agency official assesses that China's growing pessimism over its relationship with the U.S. is making Beijing prepare for a future war it would rather not fight. Quote, China doesn't want to start a fight with us over Taiwan, Doug Wade, the head of the DIA's China Mission Group, said in a virtual event hosted by the Intelligence and National Security Alliance. Quote, they will have to, they haven't ruled it out, Wade added, China's official position, they will if they have to, they haven't ruled it out, Wade added, China's official position is that it seeks, quote, peaceful reunification with Taiwan. So finally, someone is admitting the truth, which means that if the U.S. is talking all this nonsense about war with China, war with China, war with China, we need to prepare the Taiwanese military for war with China against the PLA, well, that it's not really China's war. This is the United States' war. This is Joe Biden's war. This is Mike Pompeo's war. This is John Bolton's war. This is the deep state's war. Just like the war in Ukraine is not Putin's war, but it is Joe Biden's war. This is the United States' war. The U.S. could have prevented this, but they instead chose to escalate to a real proxy war with Russia, just as like they're planning to do with China. But you know what's so interesting about China? China, as they prepare for this war that they don't want to fight, they're preparing with countries like Iran and Russia. The Security Bond 2023 exercises in the Gulf of Oman seek to inject positive energy into the region. Russia, China, and Iran are holding a five-day maritime exercise, so naval drills with Russia, Iran, and China to prepare for potential war. Okay, now what is so special about this? Well, I mean, you have countries, the largest landmass countries coming together, Russia and China, the largest populations coming together, the largest commodities owning, resource holding countries coming together that are on the precipice of developing this new multipolar world order. They're coming together, and frankly, they pose far more of a threat to the United States than the United States poses to them. I mean, assuming you're at war. Obviously, they don't want war. Russia, China, they don't want war. But if it comes down to it, if we escalate the situation to the point where we do have war, Russia and China will win. Make no mistake about it. You think our they-them army is going to go up against the PLA and the Russian military, two of the most battle-hardened, equipped, well-trained militaries on the face of the planet? You think, let me just show you this, because if you honestly believe that the United States military is going to defeat the Russians and the Chinese together, working together, and the Iranians, take a look at this. This is who the United States military is right now.
Speak for your goddamn self. Leave the rest of us out of it. Slava Ukraini. Heroyum Slava. Speak for your goddamn self. Leave the rest of us out of it. Slava Ukraini. Heroyum Slava.
So that's the they-them army. That's who we have right now, okay? So, I mean, like, look, the only way we're going to defeat Russia and China is in mutually assured destruction, nuclear Armageddon. That's the only way. We have a they-them army, and we're not going to defeat the Russians and the Chinese and the Iranians, okay? The Chinese, who have, like, one of the scariest fucking armies I've ever seen in my life, the PLA. The Russians, who are extremely battle-equipped in Syria, fighting against, like, ISIS and Al-Qaeda in Syria, fighting against U.S. proxies there and fighting, obviously, in Ukraine and doing significant damage there. And the Iranians, who also have done significant damage fighting with proxies, Yemen, against the Saudis in Yemen, fighting in Syria against the ISIS, Daesh, and Al-Qaeda, Jaish al-Islam, Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, al-Nusra Front, all these groups, right? No, this is not going to go well. This is not going to go well. But it begs the question. It begs the question, who else is going to be on their side? Because it's not just the military component. As we have learned through the war in Ukraine, it's also really about the economic component. Because economics, at the end of the day, kind of guide whether or not you can supply a military with arms, munition, artillery, energy, all this stuff. Right? And China just made something absolutely history-changing take place. Take a look at this photo right here. This took place last week. Yes, this is China getting arch enemies Saudi Arabia and Iran to shake hands and restore relations. So for the first time in years, China has been able to get Saudi Arabia and Iran, arch enemies, to shake hands and restore relations. And just like that, China suddenly became the diplomatic superpower, an elder statesman in the world. And the U.S. hegemony in the Middle East, based on the tripod of the U.S., Saudi, Israel versus Iran, falls apart. So there you have it. Saudi Arabia and Iran coming together. The United States' whole premise of division in the Middle East falls apart right before their very eyes. Okay? Should also be noted that Israel's working quite closely with the Russians. But this is extremely base. This is huge news. The fact that the Chinese got the Saudis and the Iranians to come together. Because what else does this mean? Well, it means a few things, okay? Let's take a look at it, okay? I mean, I also want to show you this. Here's another photo. Historic moment. Witnessing the historic moment. Great example of what can be achieved under China's global security initiative. Saudi Arabia and Iran agreed to reestablish diplomatic ties and signed a joint statement mediated by China. First, this means that Saudi-Iran reconciliation going to take place in Riyadh. Investments could start very quickly following the deal. Saudi's finance minister's comments come after two countries agreed to restore diplomatic relations in a deal brokered by China. Okay, Saudi Arabia's finance minister, Mohammed Al-Jadan, said on Wednesday that Saudi investments in Iran could happen very quickly following a reconciliation deal between the countries. Never in my life did I think I would see this happen, but it's finally here. Saudi Arabia and Iran coming together, and the Saudis saying that, yeah, investment in Iran is going to be taking place very quickly. Also, just so happens that this is taking place right after Iran announced that they had discovered massive new lithium reserves in their country, which I think is pretty funny. But also this right here, the Saudis are, I think what really tipped the scales is how the West treated Russia throughout this proxy war in Ukraine, and how they treated them in the energy markets, and how they treated all of OPEC in the energy markets. As Biden was begging and pleading them to increase their barrel per day production of oil, the Saudis said, no, we're working with the Russians. All of our OPEC plus member states are going to vote, and we're going to say, no, we're actually reducing our OPEC plus barrel per day production by what, 2 million barrels per day. And then the West responded and said, okay, well, we're going to undercut you on prices. Well, you can't really undercut someone on prices if you don't control the mechanisms, the levers of production itself. Okay. Demand is there. You don't control demand. You don't control production. So what makes you think you can control the prices? You can't. EU states are seeking to slash Russia's oil revenue even further by cutting prices even more. A proposal to lower the existing oil price cap could see Moscow lose $650 million per month, sources claim. And Moscow has long since been quite clear. Look, we're not going to supply oil to countries if you are paying us less than what it costs to produce our oil. We're not going to do that. We're not going to lose out to ensure that you have oil because you want to screw us all over because you don't like what we're doing in this territorial dispute with Ukraine. Your proxy, by the way. And Saudi Arabia agrees. They've doubled down as well. They said, look, we're going to threaten an oil embargo. Yeah, if you can believe it. Saudi Arabia is worried about the precedent set by Western policies in relation to Russian crude prices. Saudi Energy Minister Prince Abdulaziz bin Salman has warned Western states against capping the price of crude oil supplied by the kingdom, adding that any attempts to impose a ceiling would be met with a halt of sales and production cuts. He added that other major oil producers would most likely follow suit. So, quote, if a price cap were to be imposed on Saudi oil exports, we will not sell oil to any country that imposes a price cap on our supply, and we will reduce oil production, and I would not be surprised if others do the same. Because the Russian oil price cap hasn't worked, so the U.S. is now talking about, and the EU, G7 states are now talking about saying, well, look, we're just going to do an all-across-the-board OPEC plus cut on oil prices, completely reckless, completely deranged, and it's going to backfire for the entirety of the West in a way that I don't think any of us can even imagine, begin to imagine, okay? So there you have it. China, yeah, they're heading into a war that they don't want to fight because the West is taking them there, but they're doing it with all of the unity in the world. They've even managed now to get Saudi Arabia and Iran to come together, put aside their differences, artificial differences in many cases that were crafted by the West to say, hey, look, we want a better future. All right, on that note, folks, I want to say thank you to our second and last sponsor of the night. It is Birch Gold. Thank you so much to Birch Gold for supporting the show. If you haven't checked them out yet, you can do so by clicking on the link I'm going to send for you in the live chat right now. Here's the link, birchgold.com/Jackson. Go check them out. If you're on Rumble, if you're on YouTube, go check them out right now. They're a great company. They have been in business for years and years and years. They have an A-plus rating from the Better Business Bureau. And look, at a time when things look pretty scary with the banks right now, Signature Bank closing, Silicon Valley Bank closing, other banks looking pretty scary. You have all this betting on defaults that's taking place right now. It's about to get pretty grim. And I really do mean that. It's not getting better. I know some people are like, oh, it was just a random one-off. You know, these are crypto banks. These are tech banks. No, it's not because of that. This is a much bigger problem than that. And it's going to get worse before it gets better. Much, much worse before it gets better. It might now be a time to go talk to my friends at Birch Gold. I've been telling you guys about them for quite a while. They help you invest in gold and silver in an IRA or a 401k, meaning you're going to be doing so in a tax-free account. So if you care about protecting your wealth, from stock market crashes, safeguard against inflation, diversify your savings, go check them out. For thousands and thousands and thousands of years, gold has withstood the test of time. You know, it stood up against inflation, stock market crashes, economic crises, natural disasters, war, famine, poverty, all these things. Okay, gold has stood the test of time. And now it looks like we're going through some pretty difficult times yet again. So go check them out at birchgold.com/Jackson. They're a great company with an A+ rating from the Better Business Bureau. I highly suggest you talk to them and tell them that I sent you. Go check them out right now, birchgold.com/Jackson. And on that note, folks, thank you all so much for tuning into the show tonight. It's been a pleasure. This has been another great episode of The Dive. We're going to have some really great guests on over the next couple of weeks. So be sure to subscribe if you haven't done so yet. If you haven't joined my Telegram, click the link I'm sending in the live chat. Join our Telegram. You're not going to want to miss out. That's where you can find all of my news and all of my comments completely uncensored on a daily basis. We've got over 10,000 community members in our Telegram already. Lots of great minds in there. Thank you all for tuning into our stream tonight. Let's get some Z's in the chat. I'll see you all next time, maybe tomorrow, maybe the next day. Thank you so much for being here. Until next time, I appreciate it. As always, though, I got to end off our stream by saying, fuck Dick Cheney. I'll see you all next time. Until then, everybody, peace out. Have a great rest of your night. Z's in the chat.